Montpelier, Vermont.
All right, we are back, and let me take a moment of your time for our friends up the road here at Jet Service Envelope in beautiful Southbury. That's where you will find them. But it doesn't really matter where they are because you can just email your items, send them as attachments over there, and they'll print them out for you, doing a nice trifold brochure. Maybe you're running a political campaign, need a little trifold brochure. The folks at Jet Service Envelope can make that happen for you at 229-9335. And you also find them on the web at jetservice-envelope.com. Joining us here live in our studios this morning, let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Scott Milne, who is the Republican candidate for governor. And he's joining us here, as I mentioned, in our studios. Thanks for joining us. And make sure you don't leave, that you leave with the coffee. We have too many guests that leave.
Oh, awesome. Look forward to it. Thank you.
How are you this morning?
Very nice. Good to be here.
You earlier this week made an announcement of some sorts where you were saying that you're going to continue to take this case for governor to the legislature. You said here at one point, I believe the senators and representatives who will be electing our next governor in a joint assembly of our legislature in the new year will place the best interests of Vermont ahead of what is good for themselves or their political interests. If I were one of them, I would very seriously consider a vote for Scott Milne. What do you mean by seriously consider? What do you mean by that statement?
Well, I think we talked about an oath that folks take in Vermont, which basically says I'll offer my vote in the interests of what's best for Vermont. And so my moving forward with this, I think if we step back, there's a lot of talk about precedent. And, you know, let's just take a look at precedent. In the first half of the 19th century, I think there were 23 elections that were determined by the legislature. And granted, things were much different then. There weren't, we're kind of this multi-party free-for-all, and it made sense rather than having somebody win with 25% of the vote with, you know, six opponents to have it be decided that way. But I think 23 elections were decided by the legislature. Two notable ones, I think, went to the second place finisher, and the top vote getter was turned out. The last one, I think in 1853, Governor Fairbanks had brought in a relatively unpopular prohibition program. It was the top vote getter, but was not elected by the legislature. Earlier in the century, Thomas Chittenden, arguably one of the more well-known Vermont political leaders in history, was the top vote getter and was thrown out. And there, you know, were some questions, I guess, about personal business conduct with him or something like that that led to that. So then that's the precedent. And then we essentially have a 100-year, you know, after Fairbanks, the next governor, I believe, in 1855 or thereabouts, was the first Republican governor. As you know, Justin Morrill from Stratford, Vermont, one of the founders of the Republican Party. Then we had, and maybe a lot due to credit of the stature of Justin Morrill, we went on a 110-year Republican rule, ended by Phil Hoff in 1962 in the governor's office. So there was no precedent because everything was settled in the Republican primary for over 100 years. So then if we look at what the precedent is since Fairbanks, who was voted out by the legislature, even though he was the top vote getter, the next incumbent governor that's in this situation that Peter Shumlin finds himself in was Madeline Cunin. So Madeline Cunin is the only governor between Fairbanks and Shumlin that was in this situation. So the precedent is with Madeline Cunin, it was a three-way race. She finished 9 points ahead of the second place finisher. And I would argue every election is different, but very, very clearly the Cunin election is much different than the election this year. So the Constitution requires the legislature to vote. Whether somebody concedes or not, it's not binding. I'm not offering them an easy way out. I think they should vote for who they think is going to be best for Vermont. And if they think Peter Shumlin, who I would argue is the gentleman who got us into many of the big, big problems that we're in right now, if you're a legislator and you think the person that created the problem is the best person to help fix the problem, you should vote for Peter Shumlin. I'm offering a different alternative for folks.
Just go back here. Also, the Shumlin and Doobie race and the Douglas and Racine race also had to be approved by the legislature.
Neither were incumbents. There's no incumbent in those races. Shumlin is the first incumbent, other than Madeline Cunin, since the 1850s to be in this situation.
All right. Why does it matter if it's an incumbent or not an incumbent?
Clearly, there would be a more difficult transition strategy if it's two new people and there's a lot of uncertainty. Here we have a administration that's in place, a cabinet that's in place. It'll be a smooth transition. I'll be ready to get to work on day one.
If you're not the top vote getter, how do you justify serving if you're not the top vote getter? Wouldn't that be uncomfortable or unusual?
It'll be unusual based on Vermont history over the last 150 years. It won't be uncomfortable for me at all. What I will see is a legislature that's dominated by the other party that, as I suggested in my remarks on Monday, looks within, maybe looks in their neighborhoods, in their towns, and talks to people and decides that, you know, Scott Milne's a better bet for getting things fixed than Peter Shumlin. So I think I'll come in with a great mandate, and I'll be extraordinarily comfortable to work. I think if you look at my campaign, you know, one of the things with the way it worked out, I got zero money from any special interests. I had no PACs donating money to me. I had no political party. The Republican Governors Association didn't come in. The National Republican Committee didn't come in. I don't owe anybody anything. What I owe are the more than 100,000 Vermonters that voted for change, but all 620,000 Vermonters, the best deal that I can offer. We're going to make some mistakes, but I'll be working to represent the folks that voted against me and worked against me, as well as those that worked for me and everybody in between.
Tell me how you're looking at this. So do you view the legislature, the election in the legislature, as though it's like a clean slate and November's results shouldn't influence that at all?
I think the Constitution says that, yes.
Okay.
And I, you know, obviously I know a lot more about the Constitution now than I did on November 4th. But the Constitution does not say that you should give deference to who got the most votes. And I could, you know, do the mumbo-jumbo about, you know, if Burlington wasn't in the vote, I won the entire rest of the state. I won 9 of 14 counties. I won almost 60% of the voting precincts in the state. There's all kinds of things that you could use to say maybe counterbalance the popular vote. It's undeniable Peter Shumlin won the popular vote. The Constitution doesn't say one word about that. So it's up to the legislature to decide what they want to do. Clearly, I'm an underdog in this. And if Peter Shumlin is our next governor, I'll do whatever I can to be a good part of getting Vermont back on track. And I'll look forward to that.
Why did you say in this statement that if you were one of them, that you would very seriously consider a vote for Scott Milne? Why didn't you just say that you would vote for Scott Milne? What was that? What was that? Why did you qualify that?
Because I, from the beginning, Mark, I'm offering, you know, we can get caught up in the nuances of it. And as you well know from talking to me a few times, I'm not the soundbite, and I can wander off the point. But more or less, I'm standing for election. I saw a Vermont that I very much believe was going in the wrong direction. I'm not criticizing the folks that were in the primary with me at all, but I didn't see anybody in the primary that I thought could articulate a clear alternative and articulate really the shortcomings of the Shumlin administration in a way that would be effective in giving folks a contrast on what the choices are going forward. So I stepped forward to offer that contrast. I think one of the benefits of taking this to January 8th is to continue to offer that contrast. I would argue, I don't know this, but it's my opinion that some of the things that we've seen come out of the executive office since the election have been tempered by my continued presence in this race and the realization that maybe Milne was right. We don't have a population that thinks we need to be bold and reckless, or bold is his word, reckless is my word. We don't need to be the most radical state in the country every day. Let's slow down, manage the people's money, make sure we're not headed towards Detroit-like bankruptcy. And I think I'm offering a good voice, and I think there's an awful lot of people that voted. And, you know, we don't have polling on it, but I bet you a cup of coffee that an awful lot of people that didn't vote, an awful lot more people that didn't vote feel more aligned with the way I think than the way Governor Shumlin thinks.
What do you think has slowed down since the election because of the results?
I think we've got somebody who now is going to talk about how much this health care plan is going to cost and what taxes are going to be raised to pay for it before the election rather than after. I don't have a mole in the Shumlin campaign or anything like that, but I got an IQ of about 100, I think, and unlike most of the people in the media, I saw a Shumlin campaign in September that clearly was acting like they knew there was something up and they were in jeopardy of losing the governorship. I think that was very, very clear following the debate that you and I shared in Tunbridge in the middle of September. I saw a lot of things like that that happened throughout the campaign, you know, dumping $80,000 in advertising for somebody who had already outspent me 4-1 the Thursday before the Tuesday election. Nobody in the media even talks about that as it's some sign of this must be a close election. You guys are all still saying Milne's a joke, and, you know, everybody that says he's a joke is right. So what I see is, you know, is Peter Shumlin changed his tune, and all of a sudden, are we going to be transparent? Or does he have some read on what's going on in the legislature and had people telling him, you better start being transparent instead of just saying you're transparent? I think that's healthy. I think this abandonment of the pre-K thing, which I'm very critical of, I think it is a tremendous insight into the pervasiveness of the incompetence of the Shumlin administration. This is a bill that was promised as part of his way of carving out 50% plus one vote in 2010 to get elected. He promised this pre-K bill 4 years ago. And now, 2 weeks after the election, all of a sudden we can't afford to do it, or we didn't have time to tell people how to do it, or whatever the reason is, so we're abandoning it. I think that should have been done before the election. It's an insight into what's going on. But would he have gone forward and just recklessly managed it and sloppily implemented it, but for fear of what the tax increase was going to be, or for fear that folks would start criticizing that it wasn't going to work between now and January, and the political harm to him would be worse? My guess is yes.
Let me have you put those headphones on. 244-1777. That's our local number in Central Vermont. Toll free 877-291-8255. Let's go to Northfield. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. I want to ask Scott if he believes in one vote for one citizen. And if he doesn't, then he is fine. But if he does believe in that, he's taking the vote away from people who voted for Shumlin.
All right.
So what's he think? And I'll stay on the line because I want to talk some more.
Great. I believe that constitutions are something that we need to pay very careful attention to, Mike. The Vermont Constitution, I think we celebrate correctly for being one of the first constitutions on the planet, clearly in the New World, that abolished slavery. I believe it was the first constitution in America to separate the right to vote from property ownership. Which I agree with. I think we celebrate it for the Baker decision, which led to civil unions, for the Brigham decision that changed the way we look at funding education in our state. So
those
I'm
are all
just.
Fine, but I'm, what about my vote?
Yeah, well, what about letting me finish answering your question, sir?
The people who voted against you voted for Shumlin, not you.
Okay.
Now you want to take our vote and nullify it.
All right.
That's what you're initially saying.
Thank you.
Essentially.
Thank you for your call.
I disagree. I think it's it very well might turn out that your vote and that's a 2,400 vote difference is what's going to sway legislators, and Peter Shumlin will be governor. That's fine. We've got a constitution that I think I'm just naive enough to believe maybe we should be relying on that. And I would also add that, you know, one of the problems with the way government works is everybody's too reactive. This is a once in 150-year event. Folks that are jumping around saying, let's spend the next session talking about amending the Constitution, have the wrong priorities. We should spend the next session of the legislature figuring out how we're going to properly fund education and get the cost of state government more in line with what we can expect for revenues. I would argue we also really need to get a state economy that's booming again, and I'll be much better at that than Peter Shumlin.
Incumbent or no incumbent, Scott, if you were the top vote-getter and this went to the legislature and they picked the second-place finisher, wouldn't you feel like you'd been robbed?
No, absolutely not. I'd feel like, I probably should have been working harder with the legislature and making sure that I had a relationship with them while I was the incumbent governor.
How hard are you going to lobby legislators on this? Are you actively calling them? Are you being passive on this? What's the approach?
I'm being reactive on this. I'm not going to proactively call anybody. Anybody that wants to have a conversation or have a meeting or anything like that, I'm very, very welcoming the opportunity to do that.
Okay. You just said you're going to be reactive, but you were just criticizing the general political system for being too reactive.
Well, two different versions of reactive, though, Mark. I'm saying if you're a legislator and you want to have a conversation to understand more about what you think you're going to get with Scott Milne, I'll welcome that. If I run into people, I'm having conversations with them, but I'm not going to twist people's arms. I'm not going to be cutting deals with people about what kind of jobs people are going to get or what kind of things people are going to benefit personally from it. I think it should be more about I think the 2014 election had a lot of messages, some of which are opinions. Clearly, one message is the people are way ahead of the political elite, yourself included in that, in my opinion, and the elected people that hold the majorities in the legislature and run the executive office, in realizing that Vermont is having, in the midst of really big problems. It's approaching a crisis if it doesn't change. That's the message. I was part of that message, and I'm happy to be part of that message. And I think continuing this to January, there's not going to be any kind of constitutional crisis. There's, you know, if the government switches to me, life's going to go on pretty quickly without any interruption, in my opinion. If it stays with Peter Shumlin, I think we're a healthier state for having this discussion for another 30 days.
What have you done in the past, since the election, to be, quote-unquote, ready to go on day one?
Well, I've thought about a lot about what ready to go on day one is going to mean. I think if, you know, and I think on a contemporary basis, we can look at Governor Walker in Alaska, who, you know, because of a recount up there, new governor coming in, had 2 weeks to get ready to create an administration, and I think that's working well. I think more relevantly and interestingly, maybe perhaps more consistent with the times, if you look back to the tragic death of Governor Snelling and, you know, a member of the opposite party taking over the executive office, that's a pretty good blueprint for how I think I should move forward. And taking some more looks at how that transition was managed, what worked well in that transition, and what maybe I would do different with the benefit of hindsight. And that's the most relevant thing that I'm taking a look at.
One of the keys in that transition was that Howard Dean said day one that he was going to keep many of the people that Snelling had and also follow his agenda until the next election.
Right. I think a difference here is that if I'm elected, this Shumlin agenda is going to be rejected. But I think you hit the nail on the head. The problem with our state government is not the many great people that are running important roles at cabinet-level positions, very clearly, and even more importantly at some of those lower positions. I think there's about 80 jobs or something, 90 jobs that come with a governor's transition. I don't have anybody that I owe a job in my administration to. Clearly, I have people that I want to bring in. But I think you hit the nail on the head. If you look at the personnel management style of Howard Dean following Snelling, that's a good lesson, a good blueprint for what I think is going to be in Vermont's best interest.
We're talking with Scott Milne. Let's go to Morrisville. Don, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. Great show right from the start this morning. Scott's already answered one of my questions, but I have another that I'd like to toss out. John McLowery has spoken for the last 25 years about how good it would be to have a spot for every office where one could vote for none of the above. And I just wonder how Scott feels this election would have played out if none of the above were a choice for governor in the election last November.
All right. Thank you, Don.
No idea. Sorry.
Let's go to Callis. Gail, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Scott. I would just like to briefly comment on the gentleman that called earlier about the fact of asking about the fact that Shumlin received more votes than Scott did. I would just like to point out that there were a lot of other votes that people that did not vote for Shumlin and voted for someone else, if you get what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think people like the gentleman need to realize that. Okay?
All right. Okay. How do you view the other people in the race? I mean, for example, Dan Feliciano's votes, do you view those as basically Scott Milne votes in a runoff, or how do you view that?
Sure. No, thanks, Mark, and thanks, Gail. I think, you know, bottom line is really, unfortunately, only about one in five registered Vermont voters or eligible Vermont voters voted for either Governor Shumlin or myself. That's not a mandate, really, for anybody, and there are a lot of people that didn't vote. Unlike the Kunin case, and I think polls are irrelevant, I think the legislators need to vote based on what they think is best for Vermont and not get into all these, you know, the way my district voted, that's relevant, but it should be what you think is going to be best for Vermont, who you think is going to be easiest to work with. Clearly, unlike Kunin's case, if there was polling, most people would agree that the votes that went to the second to the third place finisher would have gone to Kunin. Here, I think most people agree that the votes that didn't go to me, the majority of them would have gone. The votes that didn't go to Shumlin or myself, the majority of those votes would have gone to me.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. Should Vermont have a runoff system?
I think we should view this as a once in 150-year event. And, you know, one of my big criticisms of the last 4 years is we get, you know, we spent a half a session talking about death with dignity, which has had zero impact on anybody's life in Vermont that I can think of right now. When we knew we had a major disagreement about the economic, the way things were going economically. Same thing, you know, with the GMO bill. We, you know, punted in the last session on doing anything on property tax reform. So I think this is a one in 150-year event, the way it looks right now. Let's just leave things the way they are and see things. We did almost zero reporting in the press on it. Mark, you were one of the few people because nobody understood my education plan, which I would argue is the best plan that I've seen in the last 20 years in Vermont for fundamentally restructuring how education works in a way that's beneficial for taxpayers and students, and also is a completely valid, very, I believe, effective economic revitalization plan that's going to do wonders for addressing our number one problem in Vermont, which is that we're getting too old. That got misunderstood or misreported or ignored, in my opinion, in a way that could have changed this election if I did a better job of convincing people how that was going to work. End of the campaign, you know, we've talked a lot internally about this little Hoover Commission in the 60s, which Dean Davis implemented. He actually headed it up in the 50s when Gertrude Mallory, who's a senator from Orange County, kind of kicked off the idea. And it was basically an awareness that the way Vermont's government was structured wasn't going to work in the modern world. That led to, you know, the agency form of government, the complex government that we have now. Originally, that was going to be a kind of a foundation of my campaign, that we need to just smartly take a big picture, relax, let's not rush into it, look at how government's going to work in Vermont. Smart people that I talked to said, that's too complex, Scott, save that for the end. When people realize you know what you're doing, see how it works. We looked at the way the education plan went over, where we released it as a press release, and it didn't get covered right, so I sent that to you. I sent that to two other reporters, thinking it would be in-depth analysis and we could have a good conversation about it. In the last week of the campaign, never came up. If you look at that again, take a look at that. That's a pretty good idea. That's what I'm going to use as a foundation for changes that need to be made in government. Mm-hmm. We should take a big look at the whole thing and not knee-jerk into changing agency of human services, adjusting the Constitution because of a one in 150-year event or all these other things. Let's get some of the smartest people in Vermont together. You know, whether it's Little Hoover Commission kind of thing or Simpson Bowles kind of format where it's take it or leave it or things like that, I think it's something that we need to do.
Let's go to Corinth. Forbes, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
All right.
This is kind of a unique one. The reapportionment, which came about, as we all know, will be argued for many, many years. Vermont's kind of in a unique situation where the if you look at the whole state as a pie, a small portion of that pie came out and voted one way, and the balance of the pie voted another way. So I really feel that the outcome of this is very instrumental in representing the state as a whole and not just a small segment.
So what do you say? We have co-governors? Where are you going, Forbes?
No, but whoever really won this or this contest, it should be in the best interest of the state as a whole. In other words, the larger portions of it, geographically, we're quite spread out and our needs are spread out. And because a small segment votes in the affirmative or negative, it shouldn't really be the overriding results of the state being represented.
Wow, you totally lost me on this, Forbes. I usually, you know, you're usually really clear. I don't get your point.
If your two neighbors vote against you,
yeah,
and they only represent a very small part of the issue,
right,
then it kind of nullifies your needs and concerns.
All right. Hmm.
So that's what basically has come down here.
All right. Okay.
With the votes, mm-hmm. if you're looking at just the votes, but then look at the area that those votes represented in comparison to the whole state.
All right. I'm going to have Scott handle this because his IQ, as he mentioned before, is about 100, which is a lot higher than mine, so I think he can probably handle this. Do you understand his point, what he's trying to say here?
Well, I think John Edwards had the campaign in 2008, or was that 2004, where, you know, there's two Americas, you know, and I think there is a valid argument.
How'd that work out for him?
Yeah, he had some personal behavior issues that I think didn't actually implode his campaign. Interestingly enough, John Kerry's first cousin lives in the Upper Valley, and so you get some good insights into what it was like to, from a family member, what it was like to be part of the Edwards campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that he didn't get elected based on, you know, just seeing how that went. But I do think there are two Vermonts, and, if you live in Chittenden County, you've seen job growth in the last 6 years, except for Orleans County. There's been no other county in Vermont that's seen job growth in the last 6 years in Vermont. That's as of July of this year. So clearly, if you look at the numbers, if Burlington was not part of the voting population, I would have won. That's one city out of Vermont. And, you know, the reapportionment wasn't a Vermont constitutional court decision. It was a federal decision. And it's one of the things I think supports my moving forward in this. Constitutions matter.
Okay, but you got to help me here. I mean, this idea of taking Burlington out of Vermont.
I'm not taking Burlington out of Vermont. What I'm saying is,
I mean, as attractive as that might be for some.
No. I think Burlington is awesome. But I think if you're looking at in the same way that we have an electoral college, I would argue on a national basis so that places like Vermont don't get are forgotten. Granted, we only got 3 electoral votes, so we get forgotten a little bit. But if you were, if we didn't have the electoral college, people would spend all their money in New York, Chicago, Miami, Los Angeles, Houston, you know, the big cities. You get a much better return for your buck there. I think the Democrats in Vermont realize they get a great return for their buck on investments in Burlington. And that can be to the detriment, relatively, benefits of government-wise to the rest of Vermont. And I think that's something that I'll be focused on if I'm fortunate enough to be governor.
Less focus on Burlington and Chittenden County.
Focused on making sure, as I would argue, Jim Douglas was very good at getting all over Vermont, having firsthand experience of talking to people on main streets and understanding what was going on everywhere, and not just assuming because you, the Burlington economy and Chittenden County economy and arguably Montpelier's, you know, economy are doing well, that means things are good and people are happy everywhere.
Speaking of Jim Douglas, shortly after the election, he recommended that you not pursue this route of going to the legislature, felt really that you should concede and live for another day, was the way he described it. Mm-hmm. Why was that not good advice?
I think that was heartfelt advice, and I very much appreciate it, and I respect Jim Douglas immensely. And I had private conversations with him. I think if you look at which before he made public comments, which is another insight into why I respect him so much. But I think his public comments were that it was in my personal political best interest if I wanted to live to fight another day, that there was some downside risk of being branded in a way that might not be conducive to me being electable down the road if I went forward with this. And that's in the Republican Party's best interest because they need candidates. He didn't say it was going to be in Vermont's best interest or that this would be bad for Vermont for me to move forward with. I listened to his advice. I thought about it. I believe very much that he might be right, but that over the next 2 years, Vermont would be much better off, in my opinion, if I were governor. And over the next 30 days, Vermont's going to be a healthier place because of the discussions that we'll be having as a result of this race as the Constitution mandates going forward until the second day of the session.
Let's go to Stowe. Jim, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to say I felt Scott ran a very good campaign, and I tend to lean Democrat, and I voted for Scott, and I feel that he was a much better candidate, honest in a lot of ways, and I think if the election was reheld, I think the people would have seen how much support he got with the amount of money he had. And I just want to thank him for running and feel he is by far the better candidate and should be governor. And I also feel that I like his format on kids' education for colleges, because I have young girls that are going to be going to college in the future, and it's very expensive. And he brought out some good facts that we haven't heard in a long time. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call. Anything you want to add to that?
Thank you. I think an awful lot of Democrats and progressives voted for me. I think, and I very much appreciate your comments on the education plan that we put forward. I hope people pay attention to it. It seems like it's being viewed as an evil plan from the devil by folks that are in power. That's one of the reasons why I think we need to change the people that are in power.
Let's go to Chelsea. Jay, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mark. And Scott, my question is, and I made a comment after the election that over half of the Vermont population that was eligible to vote did not bother voting. And that actually happened nationally. And I wonder if Scott Milne and also Peter Shumlin can consider the fact that perhaps the majority of the people in this state and in this country are looking for an entirely new paradigm that is not controlled by Democrats, it's not controlled necessarily by Republicans or Republicrats or Democrats, because there are alternatives. And I just see too much of this. What's going on now is like a competitive type of football game where this winner-takes-all nonsense is really, really disgusting, because, the majority of the people who didn't vote, I don't think you're getting the message. You're not reaching those people. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. It's an interesting argument. You make the argument that a large majority of people didn't vote for the governor. I mean, I guess he's making the point a large majority just didn't even vote.
Yeah, I think I agree with him. One out of five eligible voters more or less voted for Shumlin and for Milne. So we had a 45% eligible voter turnout or something like that. What I would say is, I think one of the, I disagree with you. I think the party system that we have is good. You can look in, other governments where there's multi-parties and you put together a coalition. More or less, that's what I'll be doing. But going forward, it'll be a Republican or Democrat, and I think that's healthy. I think one of the things, one of the big benefits I have is, I would argue, and I think Peter Shumlin is a victim of this, you look at the skills that it takes to get elected election after election over a long-term career. I would argue they're the opposite of the skills it takes to be a good leader. To get elected time after time, you sort of need to be intuitive about where the majority of the people are going. I'm simplifying it, but you figure out which way the parade's going, you jump in front, pretend you're leading it, you get credit for it. Folks that stick their neck out and say, we're going in the wrong direction, I disagree with what is popular right now, this is why, those people usually get voted out and don't have long political careers. I think that might be my future if I'm fortunate enough to get in, but I'm not looking for which way the parade's going and jumping in front. I'm looking for help in making sure the ideas I have about what's wrong are right, and that we move in those directions.
And it sounds like from the answer you gave when I asked you about what Jim Douglas's suggestion was, is that you don't really care about the next election cycle.
I think that sounds a little too simple. I would say I would much rather do what I think is in the best interest of people and be politically unpopular than get elected.
Let's go to Brookfield. Brad, good morning.
Good morning. Scott, I'm one of the Vermonters, registered voters, who didn't vote. Really just want to disassociate from this government. If I had known more about you and where you stand, I certainly would have voted for you. I live out in the middle of the woods. I hear the radio once in a while, so I don't, I'm not well informed about what's going on. But the judicial system I've been dealing with for the last 15 years is just ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. And I'm wondering if you've got any ideas or views or knowledge about what's going on there. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Brad. I would love to learn more about some of these issues. I think, we've got corrections, which, is under the executive office. Judiciary is a separate branch of government. So I'll be focused on some of these corrections issues. But the two big priorities, and correction falls under it, are Agency of Human Services, getting that functioning properly and efficiently, i.e. cost effectively, and schools. Those are the two big things we need to be working on. All these other sort of things are going to get a second fiddle if I'm governor.
You said before there's still people saying Milne's a joke. Who are you talking about?
If I said still, I don't specifically know, but I'm sure there are people saying that. But what I said is, you know, most of the media, or many people in the media at least, didn't think I was a credible candidate, didn't take me seriously, even on the eve of the election, or saying, you know, the governor's race isn't, you know, you got people, we're having a very serious debate, and you got respected, you know, press people sending out tweets, you know, every time Milne says some figure from history, have a drink, because this race isn't even worth watching, it's over.
Okay, but the National Republican Party didn't take you seriously either.
I think the National Republican Party didn't get asked to take me seriously, and not taking me as a credible person to win based on seeing, you know, National Public Radio called the race for Peter Shumlin at 7:01, 60 seconds after it was over. That's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't argue that that was wrong, and I wouldn't argue that sending out those kind of tweets is inappropriate. But just, you know, going back here in terms of taking you seriously, you were not actively raising money. You weren't really actively campaigning. You didn't.
I totally disagree with that, but go ahead.
All right. You didn't come out with a lot of ideas until very late in the campaign. So, I mean, I don't want to rehash history here, but, you know, to say that people didn't take you seriously, I don't think it was you as a person. I think it was how you were operating as a candidate.
Well, I agree that I've said I probably could have done a better job of explaining what our strategy was to people. And maybe that would have changed the way they look at it. I would argue it probably wouldn't have. But we had a very clear strategy from the beginning, which I talked specifically about with you early on,
yeah.
Which is it's a referendum on Peter Shumlin. And I think Vermont's going in a bad direction. I think if Peter Shumlin's governor, it's going to be a lot worse 2 years from now. That's why I'm drawn into this. That's what the issue was. Clearly, we wanted to listen to people. I didn't want to just come up with my, you know, person who I respect immensely, Jim Douglas or Brian Doobie or name anybody else's ideas and pretend they are my ideas. And I think it worked quite well. I think that education plan is the best idea I've seen in Vermont in 20 years. And I haven't seen anybody talk about it or argue with me about that. People, you know, Shumlin dismissed it as, oh, Scott Milne wants to save this money and force you to spend it on college. Well, it's better than his idea. You know, by the time Election Day rolled around, I had more specific ideas than Peter Shumlin or anybody else running for statewide office in Vermont. That was not talked about in the press. If that had been talked about in the press and people said, well, I get what Scott Milne's strategy was now. He does have good ideas. You guys branded me as a candidate with no ideas early on, even though I told you what our strategy was. Maybe I should have called you up every night at home and reminded you and made sure I was lobbying you to, you know, stuff like that. But I didn't do that. We had a strategy. We went with it. Peter Shumlin got 2,400 more votes. He's likely to be governor for the next 2 years unless things change over the next 30 days. And that's the way democracy rolls. And I'm not whining about it. I'm not complaining about it. But I think I'm accurately portraying the history of this election, which I think is very interesting.
I think dropping an education funding proposal in the last week of the campaign might be unfair and unreasonable for you to be as critical as you are of people not talking about it.
I think we dropped the education funding plan 3 weeks before the end of the campaign, Mark.
All right. Well, you were talking about other proposals you came out with the week before the election.
I came out with a detailed plan, which we were going to talk about after the election, restructuring, reforming, modernizing Vermont government. So, you know, essentially what we have in Vermont is a population of, Columbus, Ohio, with the complexity of government of a small European country. And that needs to change or we're going to price ourselves out of living here.
How, if you're the governor, how are you going to get anything done with the majority, the huge Democratic majority of the legislature?
I'm very clearly going to come in with a mandate from them that they want me to be governor or I won't be governor. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun and I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you for coming in.
Pleasure to be here, Mark. Thanks for the coffee.
We'll take a quick
and
break.
The conversation.
We'll take a quick break here before we wrap up. We'll be back in a moment.
Happy holidays from Walker Volkswagen on the Barry Montpelier Road. This holiday season, we are pleased to announce the holiday year-end employee pricing event to all of our current customers and future customers as well. A big holiday thank you from us to you. You pay what we pay for your new Volkswagen, saving you thousands of dollars. We won't be beat on price or payment. Just call, stop by, or go to walkervt.com for your employee price. Then take advantage of 0% financing for up to 60 months on select Volkswagen models and save even more. Or consult us on a sign-then-drive lease for as low as $165 with zero down on a European-style, German-engineered Volkswagen. It's the end of another great year, and Walker Volkswagen is determined to finish 2014 with a bang, a big bang. Deeply discounted employee pricing plus generous factory incentives combined to make a new Volkswagen a great holiday surprise. Call, stop by, or click walkervt.com on the Barry Montpelier Road and join us at the Holiday Year-End Employee Pricing Event.
Happy Holidays!
Thinking about doing some projects on your home? A home improvement loan from Granite Hills Credit Union is the answer. It's quick and easy. Borrow up to $10,000 with this personal loan at a great fixed low rate. No appraisal or title search required. Remodel your kitchen, replace your roof, or add a room. You decide. Looking to do a larger project? We have home equity loans with new lower rates or a line of credit that allows the flexibility of check writing. Give us a call, stop in, or visit us at granitehills.org to find out how you can make your remodeling dreams come true.
Granite Hills Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by the NCUA.
It's official. All Smiles Family Dental Center is Central Vermont's Invisalign preferred provider. To celebrate, we're offering Invisalign for the same price as traditional braces. Affordable financing programs are available. There is no reason not to get the fantastic smile you deserve with comfortable, clear, virtually invisible Invisalign aligners. Now for the same price as braces. Call 476-8700. That's 476-8700 to arrange a free initial consultation or visit myvtsmiles.com. All Smiles on the Barry Montpelier Road. Are you all smiles?
All smiles, all smiles.
All right, amigos, be safe out there on the roadways. It's getting a little icy again out there, and just keeping that in mind when you're making your plans for the rest of the day. Come back and join us same time, same place tomorrow. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News is coming your way next.
AP Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. Americans overseas are being warned to be alert after the release of that Senate report on the torture of terrorists.